Hello and welcome to a podcast special of Unbelievable. I'm Justin Briley, the host of the programme that is the home of apologetics debate and theological discussion. But there's no Unbelievable radio show on Premier Christian Radio this weekend because we're making space for our Extend the Hope fundraising appeal. But I never like to leave the podcast feed and website devoid of any episode of something interesting. So I'm dusting off a documentary from the archives that I made some time ago, but which we've never played out on Unbelievable. So I hope you'll enjoy that, and I will introduce that to you in a moment's time. Firstly, though, if you would like to give towards Premier's Extend the Hope appeal, it's not too late to do so. We're a listener-supported station, and if you've enjoyed listening to Unbelievable over the years, then do feel free to consider donating online to the Ministry of Premier to support our ongoing broadcasting costs. My job does depend on you guys supporting the station. If you want to donate, go to premier.org.uk/donate. The other thing I want to remind you of, if you are a UK dweller or at least can make it to London for Saturday the 2nd of July, is that Unbelievable the Conference 2016 is only about 2 months away. I'm really excited about this year's conference. We've over 10 speakers across a range of seminars as we help you to discover your inner evangelist. Evangelist Jay John will be there, along with scholars like Gary Habermas and Jeremiah J. Johnston, apologists such as Tanya Walker, Ruth Jackson and Beth Grove. There's going to be members of the UK apologetics team who are going to be speaking, and many more. Kerry L. Summers from the Museum of the Bible in the USA is going to be present telling us about their exciting initiative, and we'll be exploring evidence for the resurrection, the historical case for Christ, other faiths, people's own stories of finding Christ, answering Islamic apologetics. There's a whole stream dedicated to those reaching young people, and much more besides. So it's going to be an unmissable day to engage with the big questions around the Christian faith, how to make the case for Christ, and I'm really looking forward to meeting you show listeners there on the day, Saturday the 2nd of July at the Brewery in central London. There are student rates, group discounts and the offer of a free Unbelievable DVD of the last conference when you book two or more tickets. Go and find out more about it at premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable2016. But now on to our subject matter for this week's episode, and what you're going to be hearing today is a documentary which first aired in 2009 following a road trip that I took in America with my family at the time. Well, back then, Lucy and myself only had two children. We've now got four, which tells you that this programme is from a little while back. But I think you're still going to find it very interesting. It's called A Tale of Two Megachurches and detailed our time spent visiting two very different megachurches in the USA, Joel Osteen's Lakewood Church in Texas and Mars Hill Bible Church in Grand Rapids, Michigan, which at the time was pastored by Rob Bell, who, of course, has been on Unbelievable for a couple of high-profile encounters in the years since. Now, of course, Rob moved on from Mars Hill back in about 2012, I think, so do be aware this is a documentary that profiles those churches as they were back in the summer of 2009. Nonetheless, it was a real eye-opener for myself, Lucy and our family on American megachurch culture. So I'm glad to say, actually, I'm going to be visiting the States again with my family this summer, both the East and West Coast, and hoping again to meet some really interesting people, gather some great interviews, and probably meet a few listeners of the show en route too. Just we'll have four children in tow this time. Anyway, for this podcast-only edition of Unbelievable, I hope you'll enjoy listening to A Tale of Two Megachurches.
Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
You may have heard the saying, it's quality, not quantity that counts, when you hear someone trying to justify why a church may have relatively few people in attendance. In the UK, we've been used to declining church attendance figures year on year. But of course, there are exceptions to that, and church clergy up and down the country are doing their very best to engage and to grow their congregations. And there's one place that many have been looking for inspiration. In 20th century America, a new phenomenon emerged, the megachurch. Classed as a single church with over 2,000 people in attendance, statistics now show that over half of America's church-going population attend a megachurch of some description. I'm Justin Briley, and I'm married to the Reverend Lucy Briley, who ministers at a more modestly sized church in Surrey. We wanted to find out more about this megachurch phenomenon. We'd heard differing reports, and we wondered what was attracting so many people. Were they all style and no substance? Would there be lessons to be learned in our own church context? So, with our two children, 4-year-old Noah and 18-month-old Grace, we set off to visit two well-known churches on our American adventure.
Our road trip would take us firstly to Lakewood Church in Houston, Texas, officially America's largest church with over 40,000 in attendance every week, and led by popular TV pastor Joel Osteen, whose message of positive self-belief reaches millions every week.
I think that we need to be excellent because we're representing God. People get beat down during the week, and I like to take that half hour just to speak victory, the message of hope.
Our second leg would take us to Grand Rapids, Michigan. There, the hip young pastor Rob Bell leads a church of some 10,000 people.
We are not interested in creating an institution where people can come and escape from the world. We are interested in their ability to identify and recognize the resurrected Christ in the ebb and flow of everyday life.
Two influential pastors, two influential churches, but as we would discover, they couldn't be more different. In America, you can't help but feel that the appropriate phrase is big is beautiful, from the meal portions in the restaurant to the size of the cars on the road. As we drove towards Lakewood Church in Houston Center, I couldn't help feeling the same apply to the churches passing us by on the freeway.
When you do go past a church, you'll often find that they've got a huge sign with the church name on it and some kind of electronic billboard underneath advertising the church service times and what's going on there in bright electronic lettering. It's quite different to the sort of thing you'd see outside a church in the UK.
Obviously, church culture is much more prevalent here, and people don't hide it. It's kind of there in your face. People are not ashamed. They're not ashamed of their church. They're not ashamed of being a Christian. Hang on, which part is the church?
Well, I'm not sure.
This can't all be the church.
Lakewood Church meets in what was formerly the Compaq Center, Houston's major sporting venue. Taken over in 2005 by the growing church, it was converted into a massive sanctuary and campus at a cost of $95 million on top of the lease price. The face of Joel Osteen is clearly visible on the side of the building as we approach.
So Noah, here's a picture of what the church is going to look like inside. What do you think?
Good.
How many people can you see in that picture?
100.
Where do you think the minister stands?
Mummy, pass it to me and I'll show you.
Okay.
Which way are they facing?
I think they're all looking that way.
Well, I think the minister stands that way because he's far away.
We've come into a back entrance of the church as I'm due to meet Andrea Davis, their Director of Media Relations. The large foyer with its striking blue and gold carpet is starting to fill up with those coming to attend the second of three consecutive Sunday services.
This place is quite impressive. There are various entrances into the main sanctuary. An impressive array of wheelchairs for those who need it. There appear to be a number of buses arriving, dropping people off at the entrance as well. There's a drop-off point. Lucy, you've been off to investigate the toilet facilities.
I'm so impressed with the toilet facilities. There's loads of them. They are sparkling. They're beautiful. I found in the toilet a woman in what I would describe as a ball gown, doing her makeup. There are some seriously dressed up people here. I'm okay, but I think you're underdressed.
Andrea meets me, and we embark on a tour of the facility, which covers several stories with the bowl-shaped worship auditorium at its centre. The sanctuary is a familiar sight to the millions who watch Joel Osteen's preaching programme every week. He took over as pastor of the non-denominational church after the death of his father in 1999. And from that point, the church has experienced dramatic growth, as Andrea explained.
We have about 40,000 that come here weekly, but it seats like 16,000 in the sanctuary. And in a minute, you'll see everybody leaving. It's like a sporting event with a huge crowd. Just the whole place is just crowded.
After his father died, he just wanted to maintain the church. He was thinking that would be good. And he didn't know it would grow so big. So we've just kind of all just grown with it. His philosophy is, hey, we don't want to turn anybody away. You know, we can't say at one point, okay, we're too big now. We can't, you know, we can't allow any new people. So we just keep making room for them.
As the first service draws to a close, the lobby's beginning to fill up with a range of people. Lakewood is almost unique among Texan churches in drawing white, black, and Hispanic members in equal numbers. Many of them will continue to spend their Sunday on the grounds of the church.
This was like the number one church bookstore last year in the country.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
It does a huge amount of business here. Right here, this is the grand entrance here.
Okay. It's got escalators going up and down. It's got a lot of stairways. I guess it's just to cope with the volume of people who come in and out on a weekend.
Yeah, you'll see in a minute or so, this will be packed with people.
Andrea passes me on to Pastor Craig Johnson, Director of Family Ministries at the church, and we take the elevator up to another floor of the building where there are youth gatherings for every age. The extraordinary facility they've leased and reordered is obviously a key part of the church's strategy.
The Compact Center, and Joel will say this a lot of times, what the Compact Center gave, it was such a visible place that everybody knew they had been to a concert here, they had been to an event here, so when you're able to have a church here, and instead of maybe Shaq or, you know, one of these great basketball players, now Jesus is being represented here. That is what makes it worthwhile right there.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I happen to have arrived on a day when something special's going on the ground floor. Long queues of people are lining up to give blood. Craig explains.
We do the largest blood drive in the United States. Our people are so great. They line up.
Yeah, it's going right into the distance.
Service. Yeah. It's not about being the largest church. Whatever God gives us, no matter what size we are, how are we touching our community? How are we using that? If the mayor's office calls, like for instance, when we had the hurricanes and they would call us and say, hey, can you mobilize teams all over the city? You know what? We don't look at that as a job.
No.
That's an awesome privilege for us to do that.
I'm bowled over by the size, the variety of ministries, the hundreds of staff and the range of facilities on site. But it's time to join Lucy and the children again in the worship sanctuary as the 11 a.m. service is about to get underway. And this is the main reason that most people are here. Joel Osteen has become one of the best known, as well as most controversial figures in the evangelical Christian world. As well as his following on TV, his book, Your Best Life Now, has sold millions of copies around the world. But Osteen has been criticised by some who say that he peddles a health and wealth positivity message. I've come with an open mind, and as the service gets going, there's no doubt that an exuberant and positive message is being broadcast.
Thanks be to God.
Hey Noah, what do you think of it so far? Is it like your church at home?
No, because it's bigger than our church.
It's very big, isn't it?
Yeah.
The state-of-the-art sanctuary feels like a rock concert as the cameras sweep across the audience and broadcast the pictures to a large central screen. Joel Osteen appears beneath a huge spinning golden globe while a massed choir sweeps away in arcs on either side of the stage. There's even a cascading water feature worked into the scenery. The worship and prayer gives way to the sermon, which will be recorded, of course, for the TV broadcast.
All right, when you see yourself on the big screen, give our TV audience a great big Lakewood welcome.
Well, God bless you. It is always a joy to come into your homes. We love you. If you're ever in our area, please stop by. Be a part of one of our services. I promise you, we'll make you feel right at home. But thanks for tuning in today. Again, thanks for coming out.
With his southern twang, well-groomed hair and gleaming smile, Joel Osteen is the type of television minister that you'll either love or hate. But no one can deny that he is an excellent communicator. Personal stories are mixed with a simple message. Today, Joel's theme is getting inside information from God.
It's a knowing down in here, a prompting, a suggestion. Jesus put it this way. He that has ears to hear, let him hear what the Spirit is saying. And if you're going to have this inside information, you have to have your ears tuned to the right frequency.
I've been granted a rare interview with Joel after the service, and I begin by asking what, in his context, it means to be pastor of such a large church.
Well, what I do is do my best to feed them on the weekend and give them a good thought or something that they can use. And then we have a lot of staff members and volunteers. We have about 4,000 or 5,000 volunteers that help us through home groups and other things like that. So I encourage everybody to watch after, you know, the people that they sit around. And I really believe it's every member doing something to help others.
Lakewood is big. What do you think are the advantages of being a big church?
I think the advantages is you can have more influence just by the sheer numbers. I think that there's more resources, you know, just more programs and things that you can offer people. I think there's something special when thousands of people come together, just the atmosphere it creates, that people, you know, come to worship God. And I don't know, I think that it's a great thing. Now, I have friends that have churches that have 100 people, and that's great too. But it's just, this is what God gave us.
Joel is evidently cherished by his congregation, almost idolized, and his message is interspersed with applause as he relates stories of how he and others he knows have received divine guidance.
And I've learned this, that everything God has laid up for me, everything that has my name on it, nothing can stop me from that. At the right time, God will make it happen. And I believe even right now, there is property with your name on it. There's a house with your name on it. There's a spouse with your name on it. There's healing with your name on it. Promotion with your name on it.
Joel comes across as warm and genuine, and I truly believe he does have the interests of his church and TV ministry audience at the centre of what he does. Even so, I found myself and Lucy beside me wincing at some of the thrust of his message, which seems to suggest an inevitable link between Christian faith and personal prosperity. He's also been criticised for his own personal wealth. I asked Joel what kind of message he's trying to impart to people each week.
Well, I think part of it is the message of victory, the message of hope. Our services are a celebration. I like to do that. I think people get beat down during the week, and I like to take that half hour just to speak victory and sing songs of victory. And so I don't know if it's unusual, but it's who we are.
You've obviously got a very high profile, and with high profile inevitably comes criticism. How do you deal with that?
There's always going to be people that don't agree with you. And so I have very, very little focus on it. I don't read the blogs or anything like that. I live a very probably naive life and think that everybody likes me. And I just get up and do my best. And I don't let it distract me.
What of those who say it's Christianity light, the message, it's too simple? What do you say to people who are claiming that?
Well, you know what? I like this message being simple. Jesus' message was simple. You know, when they say it's light, you know, my response is always, we deal with everyday life issues. You know, I was praying for people today that had children that have cancer and people up in the line, huge forgiveness issues. And that's what we're talking about. To me, I don't see how that can be light. It is light of condemnation and of telling people they're terrible people and, you know, all that. I don't believe that's what I'm called to do. I'm here to lift people's spirits.
Andrea and Craig have obviously met these questions many times before.
There are pastors that teach deep theological Bible teaching, and we have those classes here. If you want deeper Bible teaching, the main sermon, it is very light, but it touches you deeply. It's simple. And so we reach a lot of people that don't normally watch Christian television, don't normally go to church.
Craig assures me that Osteen is the same behind closed doors as he is on stage.
You know, a lot of people don't see it, but in different messages, pastor will, in the middle of the message, he'll begin to cry. Joel is about as authentic a person as I've ever met, so when you see the humility on the stage, you'll see it just about in every aspect of his life. He's a real deal, absolutely. Yeah.
Just a couple of blocks away from Lakewood's imposing stadium is a historic Presbyterian church where a small congregation meets each week. Howard Reed is their pastor. I asked him whether they had experienced any changes in membership since the megachurch moved in next door.
We haven't lost members to Lakewood, and we haven't really gained members from Lakewood. I will say that their wedding policy is strict enough that we have had couples who wanted to be married at Lakewood come to our church and to be counseled and then have their wedding in our church and so forth. And some have attended our services quite regularly.
While Howard was keen to stress that he's never met Joel Osteen and wouldn't want to comment on his own spirituality, he does see Lakewood Church as embodying certain American values.
The church is very modern and success-oriented.
Do you mean by that there's a sort of a health and wealth message promulgated at the church?
Sure, yes. The message that I heard when I went and have heard people talk about is that there's a champion in each of us, and we should cultivate that champion and the winner and so forth and so on. But I preached a sermon a couple of weeks ago in which I analyzed a famous lecturer, Russell Conwell. He preached one very famous lecture 6,000 times, and the lecture was called Acres of Diamonds. But he was encouraging people to seek and to find the riches right under their noses. Conwell's Acres of Diamonds speech and the so-called doctrine of manifest destiny. America was destined to govern everything between the Atlantic and the Pacific. Those two set the dynamic for the success, prosperity gospel that we're hearing even now.
Back in his pastor's quarters, I asked Joel about where he believes the value of his church lies.
You took over the compact center here and a multi-million dollar refurbishment to bring it up to the standard that it is now. Is this the philosophy of Lakewood, that not doing things by half, kind of to go for excellence?
It really is. I think that we need to be excellent because we're representing God. You know, excellence doesn't mean, you know, extravagance. It doesn't mean you have to have, you know, tons of money, but, you know, you can be excellent with $100, or you can just have a clean place or paint on the wall. So when our broadcast goes out, I want it to look as good as the networks, just because, you know, what we have, in who we're representing.
What can't be denied is that Joel, and indeed his wife Victoria, commit 110% to the church. Immediately after the service is concluded, Joel and Victoria meet and greet every new visitor to the church.
So they're taking the time to individually shake everyone's hand. People line up and it's
yes.
kind of...
Yes, and these are people from all over the world. Literally, they come to just see Lakewood because Joel's program, mm-hmm. Joel Osteen's program, is seen around the world. So Lakewood is near the top of a visitor destination in Houston. If it's not number one, it's close to being number one.
You've come down from Michigan. Did you enjoy the service today?
Oh my gosh, it was so amazing. I couldn't believe that I was actually here, like, listening to Joel Osteen, and it just was such a blessing, and especially the worship. The worship was great.
Yeah, so you've seen Joel on the TV, and you've followed his ministry in that way?
Yeah, I have actually also have his Bible, and it's, like, incredible. So,
what did you enjoy about the service?
I really liked the worship. Like, the second the first song started, you just felt God's presence everywhere in the entire sanctuary, and that was by far my favorite part.
Where are you folks from then?
Jackson, Mississippi.
What's brought you down to Lakewood today?
We're celebrating our 11th anniversary this year. Joel Osteen has always been a pastor that we've enjoyed watching, television service, and just the opportunity to come down to visit the church.
It's been a busy morning, so the family and I head over to a nearby cafe for lunch and to reflect on the morning service. While I had many questions remaining, I'd enjoyed most of the service, perhaps more for the interest of the spectacle than anything. But for my minister wife, the experience had been a negative one.
I had a problem with the worship time, the music, because all you could hear was her singing. You couldn't hear any congregational singing, so it was very hard to feel like you were joining in or were part of it.
It makes you sound like a bit of an old fogey loser.
I like modern worship music with everybody else. I really, really enjoy it, and I really enjoy worshipping through it. But I need to be able to do that. I need to be able to worship through it and not feel like I'm just being performed at.
I'd say that the whole experience felt a bit like spiritual fast food. You went in, they delivered what you wanted. It was sweet. It felt good. I'm not sure how much lasting good it's going to do, but you'll probably come back for more the next week. That's kind of what it felt like to me, spiritual fast food.
My fear is that people just go back there because it makes them feel good, that it's not about a sacrificial picking up your cross to follow. It's not that kind of discipleship at all. It's all about me, 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 and nothing about anybody else.
Having said that, they were doing the largest blood drive in America. That's got to count for something, hasn't it?
And that's fantastic, but I would like to see that putting our faith into action reflected in the worship and in the preaching.
Whatever our reactions to it, visiting Lakewood Church had been an extraordinary experience. Now we would set off on the second leg of our journey to visit another mega church, but one that in style and substance is radically different to Joel Osteen's. Mars Hill Bible Church in Grand Rapids, Michigan, was started in 1999 when a young pastor, Rob Bell, was commissioned to plant a new church in the area.
Grand Rapids is a little more understated than Houston was. The billboards aren't quite so large, and the church is not quite so obviously signposted. There's no electronic flashing signs as you go past telling you when the services are.
Branded theologically as an emerging church, Mars Hill experienced rapid growth in its first years, becoming the fastest growing church in America for a time. Now, with 10,000 in attendance every week and Bell's podcast sermons downloaded by thousands more, the church has become well known in the area. If only we could actually find it.
We
there's absolutely nothing that says that the church is here, but it must be here soon.
Can't see any signs. Maybe it's where these cars are going in.
Should we go in?
Let's try.
With no clear indication as to whether we're at the correct destination, we follow a stream of other cars and pull into a parking lot of a rather drab-looking building.
There's nothing that even says it's a church. How interesting.
If anything, it looks like a slightly abandoned shopping mall. And that's it, really. So,
let's go in.
We've arrived for the first of two morning services, and hundreds of young 20 and 30-somethings are streaming into the building. When I speak to Belle later, the first thing I ask is, why no signs?
So, Rob, we've just come to Mars Hill for the first time, my wife and myself and my two kids.
How was it for you?
We really enjoyed it, thank you. But you could get a sign for the church. I mean, for the biggest church in Grand Rapids, you might think there would be a bit more signage.
It's not a church. It's a building, and church is people. So if we put a sign out front, it would be theologically incorrect. Perhaps it could say the occasional meeting place of Mars Hill Bible Church, but that would be a bit of a long sign. It's very intentional. Church is people. And we might gather together in a building, but it's very easy, especially in American culture, to get all confused and start thinking that the building is the church. And then that takes you down a road that's not pretty. So it's all intentional. And did you find it?
We did.
Well, then,
yes.
Then I rest my case.
If you seek it, you will find.
Yes, it's church for those who want it bad enough.
Well, here we are at Mars Hill. Certainly the first thing that strikes me is that whereas Lakewood was a converted stadium, this is a converted shopping mall. Lakewood didn't look like a stadium anymore. This still looks like a shopping mall.
Yeah, it's very low-key, very understated, very plain, smart. It's clean, it's tidy, it's spacious. There's people milling around. People can help themselves to coffee as they go through into the service, and big mountains of donuts on offer. That's good.
The contrast to the Lakewood facility couldn't be more stark. When the church were given the former shopping mall to house their growing congregation 8 years ago, they decided to leave it largely unchanged. Where there were shops, there are now creches, youth rooms and offices. We drop our four-year-old son into his age-appropriate children's group and join the throng heading towards the sanctuary, the large gutted interior at the centre of the mall, filled with grey plastic chairs.
It feels very laid back. People are wandering through into the 9 o'clock service with cups of coffee. Nothing terribly attractive about this place. Really just seems quite functional in a way, doesn't it?
I love the layout of the place, though. The stage is right in the middle of the square-shaped room, and it's not clear which way those on the stage are going to be looking when they speak, because the chairs are facing all directions into the centre of the room.
I pick up the issue of churches and their buildings with Rob.
The decor is very simple. Put it this way. I went to Lakewood Church in Texas. They have this amazing, incredibly high-tech facility for everything.
We're a bit like a storage closet.
People do associate church with the building, but you're purposely steering away from that model.
Well, what's interesting is just your average dumpy cathedral in a standard little out-of-the-way English village would blow away that thing. So, if you've traveled just a bit, you're less impressed with American altars to spiritual achievement. And I don't have any problem. I mean, if somebody wants to build a really nice building, the problem for us is we just have a lot of people here who are having trouble paying rent and are having trouble with their food bill. We've been trying to help out with a microfinance bank in Burundi and engaged with people who are living on less than a couple of dollars a day. So it just becomes hard to justify expenditures when the world is suffering like it is. So this is extravagant. This is actually extravagant on a global scale. Mm. So there are churches meeting in trash dumps, and there are churches. I was in Costa Rica and saw a church that they don't have any walls because they can't afford them. So it's all a matter of perspective.
The philosophy that the church is not the building is evidently strongly shared among the staff. I spoke to Angela on the welcome desk.
Somebody once said the feel of the building tells you
about what you value, and we don't value people coming here, we value them going out. And so it's very basic, very clean, very rough around the edges, so to speak, but also trying to be as warm and welcoming for the people who are visiting and coming here for the first time. So,
do you find people just discover Mars Hill? Is it that people recommend it? They kind of bring a friend along? How's the normal method that people start attending?
Yeah, that's a great question. A lot of people either see a Numa or hear Rob's teaching or kind of hear about it through the grapevine. And then every single week I have people from all over different countries, and it's always overwhelming that they would drive to come here. And we just, you know, I've been a part of this place since day one, and it feels like people are thrilled to come to your kitchen or something, but it's a joy just to be able to kind of interact with different churches.
As the service begins, I can't help feeling that Mars Hill is somewhat self-consciously a trendy church. If Lakewood is the equivalent of an X Factor-style musical experience, Mars Hill is its hip indie cousin, and that's reflected in the worship music, which is simpler and a little rougher around the edges.
If anyone comes thirsty to me, and he keeps coming to drink to me, out of his soul, water.
After worship, prayers and sharing of church news, Bell bounds onto stage. In his black-framed glasses and low-slung jeans, he epitomises the hip image of the church, and he holds the congregation in rapt attention for the next 50 minutes. Today, his message is on breaking down the divide between what we consider holy and common, and he's using a wooden doorframe as an onstage prop to help him make the point.
I should take off my belt, airport security. Well, airport security joke for you there. Now, what you have is a differentiation of physical space. So you have the common, and then build a temple, so a space other than regular space. So there is the realm where you actually live, the common. But now I want you to distinguish a place that is sacred, set apart from the everyday ordinary.
It's an in-depth and quite heavily theological sermon. Again, a contrast to Joel Osteen's self-confessed broad and simple message. But the way in which Bell communicates it seems to be a major influence on why Mars Hill is attracting so many. Jetty is one of the many young white professionals who attend the church.
What keeps you coming back week after week? What do you think is unique in Grand Rapids about Mars Hill?
I had a friend who invited me to come along with her, and the way that this person, Jesus, was talked about was refreshing, new, different, surprising. The way that people were accepted and loved was new to me, and so I think that's what keeps me coming back.
I mean, it's very relaxed, isn't it? It's sort of people wandering around with coffee in their hands.
I would say I've always heard it described as a church where someone could just wander in, wearing whatever, carrying along whatever normalcies of life, and just kind of sit and receive. So I would say that I agree that it's laid back and really open to where a person's at. I think that that draws a lot of younger people as well, 20s, 30s age group.
I asked Bell his thoughts on the numbers who come.
It's not the building. It's not necessarily your facilities. What is bringing people together? Is there a sense of community they're finding here that maybe is not found elsewhere?
I don't believe that community is created. I believe it's discovered. So one of the things that the first Christians talked about was that in Jesus we find a new humanity. And so what our culture does is it divides us politically, economically, socially, ethnically. And then we kind of, if we can get past all of those walls of division, we get back to our common humanity. And our understanding is that a Jesus community is a place where you are constantly finding out that you have something in common with these people who, at first glance, you assumed you had nothing in common with.
Through his popular Numa DVD films, his podcasts and his books, Bell has earned his fans and critics in equal measure to Osteen. Where Osteen is criticised for dumbing down the gospel with a prosperity message, Bell has his critics in the evangelical world who claim he's not orthodox enough in his beliefs, preaching a social gospel that's too open-ended. As he signed copies of his latest book, I asked him how he deals with all the attention he receives.
We have tried to create a life for ourselves where I am interacting every day with people who couldn't care less what I do. We've tried to live very under the radar because I'm not interested in living in an artificial world of my own construction.
Is there a danger that people do come to Mars Hill, though, for Rob Bell?
Yeah, I guess so. But one of our pastors, Brian Mucci, can solve all that. And Brian Mucci, one of our pastors just came in the room, and he doesn't come here for that. So we've got at least one person with their head on straight. He comes in spite of.
I still couldn't help feeling that Bell had ducked my question slightly. It seemed to me inescapable that part of the attraction of Mars Hill was its charismatic pastor, in that sense not so different to Austin and Lakewood Church. I was interested to find out what other local churches thought of their neighbour. David Dieters pastors a local Reformed church, the predominant historic denomination in Grand Rapids.
Rob Bell is highly respected. Mars Hill Church is highly respected. I think there's a theological integrity that Rob brings to that congregation that's helpful. I think people also are impressed with and appreciate the anonymity that it affords them and the depth of programming. It also perhaps allows people the freedom to not have to invest too much.
I'm guessing, though, a church can't grow to that size that quickly without perhaps some of the churches around it suffering somewhat from their members going there.
That's a pretty blunt question. But you're right. We've lost a couple of families or transferred a couple of families to that congregation. But certainly the churches in that area, and a rather significant part of Mars Hill, is made up of people that have left Reformed and Christian Reformed churches in the area. And there's no question that that's hurt. It's negatively impacted our current ministries and forced us to mature and celebrate with some other church there the blessing that those people bring to those congregations.
David seemed to be suggesting that the anonymity offered by the megachurch phenomenon was at least partly the draw to people attending Mars Hill. In contrast, Angela at the welcome desk told me that the way the church grew, especially in the early days, was because of a desire for something fresh.
The famous stories of never having enough chairs, like we're ordering more chairs every week, the very beginning, and I think mostly it was just humbling and moving that people were so hungry for something new and fresh and powerful that really felt relevant.
With the service over, it was time to get a younger perspective on how the morning had gone.
So Noah, what did you do when you went into the children's church at Mars Hill?
Well, watched a movie. We did some colouring and we were learning about seeds, how they grow.
And did you learn about Jesus as well?
Yes, because God made a plant. That's what we were learning about.
Oh, that's a good thing.
It had been a fascinating journey to see two massive churches approaching faith, theology and their public image so very differently. In both churches, the sense of thrill at being joined with thousands of others in worship was obviously a great experience. I still wanted to know, though, from Rob, whether ultimately it was important that those who came attended not just a church, but a mega church.
I think we're probably far less interested in attend, and we are more interested in the kind of stories that are being told. So numbers was never the driving impulse. It was always just an interest in pursuing what does the Jesus movement look like in the world we find ourselves in. So we're far more interested in the kind of stories we're hearing than the amount of people. And then secondly, attending a large gathering, that's just attending a large gathering. That's a different thing than confession and repentance and generosity and reconciliation and acts of justice and compassion and love and mercy. That's anybody can just go attend an event. So in some senses, we have a very high view of what's possible in a public worship gathering, and also a very low view, because it's a gathering where you can come and sit. So I think we live in that tension.
I asked local church pastor David Dieters for his view on whether the megachurch phenomenon was the future for American Christianity.
No, in fact, I think we're past that, and I think the trend is now, I think people are realizing the importance of accountability and community. And I think the trend now is back to a smaller congregational size. People that I've talked to that have kind of filtered themselves back have found themselves in a situation where they needed community and needed pastoral care from that community, either because of illness or a death or a divorce. And the anonymity then doesn't allow them to receive that kind of care, and that's still an important value in this part of the nation, in this part of Michigan for sure, that there be a relationship with a pastor.
Bell is obviously uncomfortable with labels like emerging or megachurch when it comes to Mars Hill, and I sense that he wants the church to buck the trend.
Do you think that people are overly concerned with their buildings and their worship leaders and the big preacher man? Down in Texas, you drive down the freeway and there's a huge church on this side and then another huge church on this side and a huge flashing sign telling you when their service are and who the worship leader is.
A lot of men with unresolved issues, apparently.
I mean, is that kind of the model in the U.S.? Is that a danger?
Well, you were in Texas, so in some ways you landed on a different planet.
Mm-hmm.
I think that what you find, you will look for. If you want to look for excess and ostentatious displays of wealth and flamboyant spirituality, you can find that. But if you want to look down the street, around the corner in a basement or in the back of a club, you will find all sorts of fresh expressions that don't look anything like that. So church is a pretty dangerous word to use because people have all sorts of understandings of what that means. And we maybe think we're talking about the same thing, but we're talking about very, very different things. The spectrum is quite wide. So my experience has been you can find whatever you're looking for.
As we drove away from the church, Lucy and I reflected on a very different experience.
The thing I found, though, is that Mars Hill kind of breaks all the rules of what I imagine a megachurch should be and how it should, if you like, publicise itself.
I thought the teaching was excellent. I mean, Rob Bell is clearly a smart, intelligent and very gifted speaker, and I can see why people are attracted to that kind of quality of teaching every week. It really was something special.
But at the same time, I think Joel Osteen is also a smart, intelligent, gifted speaker. It's just he's doing it for a different kind of audience, possibly.
I agree, Joel Osteen is gifted and talented and passionate and on fire and clearly committed to what he does in a really big way. But the style of preaching is so, so very, very different. For me, the style of Mars Hill appeals so much more. I really like to engage my brain. I like to be challenged. I like to go away with something that I think might make a difference to the way I live and the way I treat other people and so on. And I certainly got that message from Mars Hill.
Whatever their differences in style and theology, I couldn't help feeling that these two churches have more in common than they might admit. Yes, they're both large in numbers, but it strikes me that that is down predominantly to an attractive leader in both cases. Rob Bell and Joel Osteen may be poles apart in theology and style, but they're both media-savvy, born communicators. In both cases, the church gathered around them is a product of their drive and ethos. The message and packaging was certainly different for different audiences, but a personality was still at the heart in both cases. Both work tirelessly at the message they believe people need to hear. The question is, which message does the American church need to hear right now? And which message will the wider church, especially in the UK, take its lead from? Well, I hope you enjoyed listening to our American adventure. That was broadcast first back in 2009, dusted off from the archives for this podcast special of Unbelievable This Weekend. Just a quick reminder that if you want to get in touch with me about today's programme, feel free to email unbelievable@premier.org.uk or feel free to leave your comments underneath the latest edition of the programme at the website premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. Unbelievable, and there's the Facebook and Twitter account as well if you want to leave me a message that way. You can find out more information about Unbelievable and Unbelievable the Conference from the website too. And don't forget, if you'd like to generally support the ministry of Premier Christian Radio, it's not too late to donate to our Extend the Hope appeal at premier.org.uk/donate. But for the moment, thanks for listening to today's podcast edition of the programme. Back to the usual radio show at the same time next week, when I'm going to be chairing a discussion on whether we're losing our belief in the value, the intrinsic value of human life. And some very special guests joining me for that. Atheist ethicist Peter Singer will be one of my guests. He's well known for taking from fairly strong positions on the issue of human life. So he's going to be discussing that with Richard Weikart, who's a professor out on the West Coast of America, and his new book, The Death of Humanity, has recently been released. And Susan Blackmore, an atheist philosopher, psychologist from here in the UK, is also going to be contributing. So hope you can come back same time, same place for Unbelievable next week. Until then, have a great week.